three primary leader levels of leadership that I'm going to talk about and kind of what I'm mostly exposed to. Level one, leaders of teams and individuals. Level two, leader of leaders. Level three, leader of leaders of leaders. And it can keep going. So I don't talk about L4 and up, but like my kind of convention here is I just add another number every time you go another layer. But depending on how large your organization is, you can have leaders of leaders of leaders of leaders and so on and so forth. Sometimes that hierarchy shifts, and almost always it shifts just because you start getting a problem with scaling type issues. So usually there's some kind of adjustment here. For the most part, with any, I think the kind of L1 to L3 thing, which people might say like a manager, a director, a VP type structure tends to be quite common. So I'll stick with that. It starts getting into things that I'm not as exposed to. So I don't really want to comment too much about that. Okay. So given that, that's just kind of give a sense of what I'm talking about of different levels of leadership. Let's look at tactics for influence at each level, starting with the L1 leaders. So if we think about, and I don't know what kind of, I assume everyone has exposure to a leader as long as you've ever been exposed to like reporting to someone. So what do people where like that's first level, what they tend to do, like what occupies their time? What I've typically, like these are kind of the typical things that I've seen fills up most of the time. One, they're growing individuals or they're growing teams. So whatever that might look like in terms of how they do that development, but they're spending a lot of time growing individuals and teams. They're engaged in hiring and firing, depending on the hire rate of the organization that may eat up a lot of time or not that much time. They're typically involved in facilitating delivery. So given this is like the first level of management, they're still pretty close to what is required to deliver outcomes. So they may be involved in that. Depending on the organization, they may be even accountable for that. So they spend a lot of time on it or not. And finally, they will be the first point of contact for any issues. Meaning if there's an escalation, there's questions, some larger change occurred and people are asking, like getting support or whatever for that, the L1 leader is the first point of contact for the vast majority. Obviously, if you are a leader, your first point of contact with whoever you report to, but the L1 leaders are the vast majority of the organization will be reporting to this, like because most people will be individual contributors rather than managers, hopefully. If your organization has mostly managers and not a lot of individual contributors, then there's probably some bigger problem, which I'm not going to bother talking about. Okay, so this is this is where they occupy their time, and these are the problems that I think I've found typically show up because of these are where they spend their time, and which also are opportunities for leverage to influence. So. Depending on the level of experience with this leader too, like if you are a first time leader, you're very likely to be a level one leader, right? Because you've never led anyone before. So you're going to be just leading teams and individuals, not leading other leaders. That's unlikely. So, which means that a lot of these things are associated with learning how to be like your first time leader type stuff. So growing individuals, teams, like maybe you had experience with that doing as an individual contributor, or this could be your first time starting to be the person that is listening, asking questions, giving feedback to people, that sort of stuff. This might be the first time you're dealing with hiring and firing. And generally, like that is probably the most severe version of things. But things that require, like they're very strong emotional context and high stakes type situations. So how do you deal with that, which you might not have been dealing with as much before? The facilitation of delivery, a kind of typical problem I see is just shifting from, I just, as an individual contributor, you could just do it yourself. But now that's not what you should be doing because you're facilitating, you're not driving delivery per se, or like running delivery. And then when you're the first point of contact, so something large happens in the organization, maybe you weren't even involved in that, and yet you're still the first person people talk to, how do you deal with that? And these kind of are the forces, given these are the troubles that typical for the L1 leader, that means my tactics here tend to reflect those things. The general theme I have for when you're trying to influence a level one leader is you're trying to help them learn how to be more effective as a leader from the baseline level. So three things here. The first one is how do you effectively facilitate delivery? Second one is how to delegate and empower. And the third one is how to deal with difficult conversations, especially the emotional aspect of it. Okay, so this one, the facilitating delivery, as in, like I say here, this is where you share or apply useful agile lean concepts and practices to help them solve delivery problems. This is typically what I've done to influence level one leaders. I don't really intend to talk a lot. I'm not going to talk a lot about this, mainly because I think even for this crowd, this is typical stuff, right? We're an agile lean meetup. This is normal stuff. Nothing particularly interesting here. But this is where you go, okay, there are these sort of things that maybe these are kind of easy for us. They're actually most useful when you're talking about L1 leaders who are concerned about facilitating delivery, like they're concerned with delivery problems. Okay, I got tricks that I can share, and then you find me useful, that kind of stuff. This is where that fits. I'll talk later about like this problem or this concern doesn't hold later on. So that's why some things just don't work as well. Okay. The second thing, they're trying to learn how to empower and delegate, et cetera, sharing useful models for empowerment. So, hey, I'm a new leader. I can help you work out how to think about empowerment. So not just as a one line word, but, oh, how do you structure it such that you can gradually increase the ability to delegate and be able to trust that people do stuff? The model that I've typically used and I like is called the ladder of leadership. This is by L. David Marquette. He wrote a book called Turn the Ship Around. Actually, how many people have read Turn the Ship Around? I'm curious. I see one hand, but I can only see one hand. Okay, I saw a couple. Oh yeah, if you use the Zoom thing, then I'll see it pop up. So that actually helps. Okay, so like it's a good book to read. It is about creating more leaders, which is effectively what a good L1 leader, that's what they're trying to do, right? So they're trying to free up time, build people up. I mean, I like this thing. It kind of says, hey, no matter what level someone is at, you can always move up to the next level. So if they're kind of, someone's reporting to you and they always want you to tell them what to do, you can at least get them to start sharing their observations of what's going on. And then if they do that, then they get them to share what they're thinking about what they're seeing. And then if they're thinking about things, you ask them what they would like to do. And if they're able to say what they would like to do, you ask them what they intend to do. And then if they talk about what they intend to do, you essentially say, why haven't you already done it, really? So, if they are doing things, like then you kind of move on to they're already doing this. So this is all step-by-step. How do you get someone from tell me what to do to taking their own initiative, being more independent, growing into a leader themselves, that sort of thing. And this type of discussion seems to happen quite a bit more at the L1 leader side, especially with newer leaders, but even with more experienced ones, because this is a very common thing. General idea here is doing this means that they find you useful, and then you can influence various things. The last thing that I think a tactic that seems to be most useful for influencing L1 leaders is sharing useful models for and helping them practice for difficult conversations. So the picture here I have is from Crucial Conversations. Like they talk about conversations that have differing opinions, strong emotions, high stakes, which is the most difficult conversations to have, and how to go about that. I found like helping someone learn how to deal with something like that, which is quite scary if you're not used to it. Even if you are trained and used to it, it may still be a little bit scary. So being supportive there, being ready to help them with that, including role play simulation to help them practice, that does buy you a lot of influence. And so then they One, like they go, okay, this person is helping me do my job more effectively, but also you're already into, now you can talk about serious things because you're both understand a model for how to do that. Okay. Karsten, you raised your hand.
No, that was just because I forgot to lower it after you asked about who read the book.
Oh, sorry. Okay, cool. Okay, excellent. Okay. So there are, I should say, there are different models for this. And I like, even for the previous one, there are different models. The main thing I want to convey is if you are useful for this particular topic, your level of influence tends to be like, it's a good path to acquire influence because this is a very common concern. Okay. So now if we go to level two leaders, the type of activities are quite different. There may be some overlap, but for the most part, the kind of top of mind where most of the time goes is different. So there is still growing people type angle, but for a level two leader, so this is leader of leaders, who you're growing tend to be other leaders, both either formal or informal. So what I've typically seen is an L2 leader would grow, like, for example, they're trying to develop engineering managers or informal leaders in my mind would be like staff plus engineers. So the very influential individual contributor or an engineering manager. And the skills that you're trying to convey there or help someone develop are kind of different than what you would do as an L1 leader. Effectively, you'd have to be say, hey, I know the skills that are effective for being an L1 leader and I'm trying to convey that as an L2 leader. So instead of hiring and firing, even though you are still doing hiring and firing, but it's just not nearly as common because just less roles, I guess, even though it can eat up a lot of time if you're trying to replace people. But the bigger thing I think is more negotiating for headcount. So about this level, you are typically involved in negotiating for budget capacity for hiring and all that kind of stuff kicks in, which would not be something necessarily you'd be as aware of or concerned about before. But here now you're going, okay, how many people do we need? Like, how do we negotiate all this kind of stuff? Which can again be like overwhelming or concerning if you've never done before. You're not at this level, L2 leaders, you're not facilitating delivery so much as framing and kind of facilitating the overall delivery system type thing. So there'll be multiple deliveries going on. You're kind of putting some umbrella around it so people know why they're doing certain things, but also ensuring more systemic patterns are dealt with. There is a lot more coordination politics at this level, specifically with other leaders of leaders. And this is not to say that there's not coordination politics at different levels, but this is where I've seen it's almost like a jump that occurs, mainly because usually you're crossing larger boundaries at this level. And finally, I'd say there's some time, what I call compensating for air sandwiches. So what's an air sandwich? An air sandwich is when there is some higher level vision for your organization that everyone knows. There's high level vision. There's the day-to-day stuff, which your L1 leaders are taking care of. So day-to-day delivery stuff. And then there's the in-between, which shows the connection between the day-to-day stuff and this high-level vision. And a lot of places, there's a big hole there, right? So nobody knows how to connect what they're doing day-to-day to what the overall organization is trying to do. Usually at this L2 level, and it does occur at different levels in between as well. But L2 is probably the first point of contact where people on teams are going, I don't understand how we're doing connect to this bigger picture. This is where this shows up the most. So I call that compensating for an air sandwich. Not saying that I think every organization should have or does have an air sandwich. It just happens often enough. And these L2 leaders are eating it the most. So they kind of have to work out, how do I deal with that? And now, like, you can't say, hey, that's someone else's problem, because it is your problem. You're the person that everyone's coming to. So again, what are the typical issues with these responsibilities? One, Because people expect you to reframe and facilitate overall delivery, there's a lot of questions about what's going on, how do we deal with it, type stuff. When you're starting getting more politics type stuff, so how do we deal with politics? Like, I think when people talk about, which I don't like, I actually don't like describing it as such, but when they're saying about shielding or taking care of the politics stuff, I'm like, normally you would say, oh, someone else can take care of that for me, so I don't have to worry about it. And then once you get into this type of level, then you're the person taking care of it. I usually would say, but this is the kind of gives the details, like you don't want to protect people from context per se, but you do want to facilitate and make it less of a distraction. But how do you deal with that? Compensating for air sandwich stuff. There's just a large concern about how do I get all these teams, like they're all over, like all doing their own thing. How do we get them all aligned toward a shared goal? This type of thing happens quite a bit here. Okay, so in terms of tactics for influence, a lot of it falls underneath that umbrella of how do I help this person align a bunch of teams toward a shared purpose? Again, if you are helpful there, then again, you become more influential because these are the key things that the L2 leader is concerned with. I have four things here. One, how to do large group communication, both written and spoken. Highlighting problems that they weren't aware of. This is where the distance starts to increase. And as a third party, if you will. Now, it depends, again, like I'm talking as a consultant slash coach, so I'm outside the reporting line. So I can point out and see things that is difficult for them to see. And then how to structure good strategy. Again, like if L2 is trying to frame overall delivery, which is now we're getting into strategy and stuff, how to both determine and communicate that, and tactics to deal with buy-in and politics, because both you're trying to align everyone within your organization as well as get buy-in from partners or other organizations that you need to deal with. Okay, so one thing I found, this happens quite a bit, of I spend a lot of time with these L2 leaders. A lot of stuff I do that seems to be effective for influence is just providing feedback to improve the effectiveness of their large group communication. I don't know where it comes from, but it seems like at a certain level, people just start sounding corporate for some reason. I don't know who's telling them to do this. So if you help someone simplify their language so they don't sound, they sound inhuman effectively, which means that makes it harder for their message to be received. That helps a lot. If they improve their logical narrative structure, so it's not just a random set of points, that there is a logical sequence and relationship to a message, probably even before we talk about language, that improves the quality of the message. And just, it's kind of related to the simplify, but this thing of being more transparent, authentic, just like say, like get to the point, say the thing, don't try to work around it, right? There's especially being at this level, being like working around it, not really saying what you want to say, ends up producing a lot of rumors, which creates trouble. So the idea here is providing this feedback, and as the large group communication gets more effective, again, you're useful, and then you become more influential. People come to you for help for stuff because they can trust that you can help them convey the message they need to convey to the larger group. That's like in terms of feedback, like things you say, hey, if you're reviewing something. There's also something around structure and process to improve the effectiveness of large group communication. So I think if this is not something they've done before, like maybe earlier on when they were just a level one leader or an individual contributor, they would just wing the message. So they write something and they just send it. And it's like, it's probably okay. Typically at this level, if you're level two, if you don't do it well, you're going to get a lot of pushback or complaints or like all these consequences. It's just the impact of each message is noticeably higher. So it's important to make sure that it's effective, that you anticipate the problems that will occur. So typically I've introduced a more structured process for this, that you have an initial author write a draft. You're getting feedback from a smaller group initially, typically a leadership team if you have one, or a targeted reviewer, so people that are influential within the organization that you know can give you good feedback. Then you send the message, then you're monitoring the reactions and following up as needed if it didn't get received well. And then you're repeating this message as often as required to get the message across. So it's a much more systematic way to communicate, which again, first time being a level two leader, they may not know to do that and they just try to wing it and then it doesn't work. Helping people know how to deal with this, like usually, like sometimes it is, they try the winging thing and then they go, that didn't work, and they get really concerned, et cetera, and giving them something to help them feel more comfortable with this process, helps them out, it's useful, and builds you influence. Okay, check my pace here. So next thing is providing early awareness of hidden problems. So as mentioned, this is primarily when you're outside the reporting line. Even if you're inside the reporting line, if you're aware of problems that they're not of, it's useful for them to hear it. I think there's a very common phenomena with L2 leaders, like where it starts really, it gets worse the further up you go, where they stop knowing what's going on. I think sometimes people think, they're not doing something because they don't want to do it. It's sometimes they don't even know the problem exists because nobody's telling them, and they can't see it because there's just not enough exposure. So being a person who shares problems that they can't see is very useful. One strong way to do it, I think, which again, I think relates to some probably typical for people in the lean community, is visualizing. So some things are too difficult to even understand if you're just talking about it. But if you can put up a map or a picture of some sort, it becomes more obvious that there's a thing that's worth dealing with. I've shared a few here. Like the first two are kind of a typical lean thing, like value stream map, Pareto charts, just say, hey, here's the thing, and this is what's going on. And that becomes useful. And they like that. The last one there is a Wardley map, which is effectively just showing, it's kind of like showing, I would say, how are the things that we're building, how do they lay out in a product life cycle, so we understand whether we're allocating our efforts strategically, that it makes sense, that sort of thing. All these things are about, again, creating awareness of hidden problems. You become useful and more influential. As I mentioned before, there's an expectation the L2 leader is almost like first point of contact for strategy stuff. There are broader levels of strategy, but there is at least some discussion of strategy here, because you're saying, what is the strategy for at least our local area, multiple teams, et cetera. I think I've actually found a lot of people have really bad models for strategy. So sharing something useful, but also simple, is useful here for influence. The best one I like here is from a book called Good Strategy, Bad Strategy. They have a kernel here, which has three parts. One is a diagnosis of a situation, guiding policy, which is kind of guiding principles for how you think we should respond to that diagnosis, and then a set of coherent actions. So really three things. If you're saying developing a strategy, you really want to make sure you answer all those. If you get that core there, then you can build off of, and that's been helpful. So it's difficult sometimes, I think, for people at this level there's an expectation for them to work out the strategy. And a lot of times I don't think anyone taught them how to think about stuff like this. So it's useful to be able to do that. Again, being useful, showing something new builds influence. Okay, last thing is sharing useful tactics to deal with buy-in and politics. Again, like I mentioned before, at this point, you start dealing with having to deal with much more significant cross-boundary politics. If depending on the organization, you could already be dealing with that lower levels, in which case it's even worse of a mess. But even with good organizations, at this kind of L2 level, there is just more of it, just because the you start crossing boundaries where people don't work as often together, so they don't resolve things as much. So you're still dealing with this kind of initial, much a higher jump in terms of politics. There are useful tactics here, again, born from the lean space. People talk about Nemawashi. Actually, how many people have heard of Nemawashi? I'm actually curious, because sometimes I... Nemawashi, how many people know this? I got one hand. You have lean in the title of your meetup. You got to know this stuff. So Nemawashi, old school Toyota type thing. It's effectively, it's typically translated as preparing the ground. So if you, the kind of thing here is you don't get agreement in a large group setting, like in a meeting. You don't even try to. What you need to be doing is you get agreement by this kind of repeated back and forth with individuals, like getting in touch with people, making sure their concerns, reflecting concerns, doing all this stuff. And they call it preparing the ground because you do all of that. So by the time you have any kind of formal get together to say, hey, we're going to make a decision, you already know what's going to happen. You don't walk into kind of this high pressure group situation not knowing what the result is going to be because you prepared the ground beforehand. That's called Nemawashi. It is a very useful common tactic for larger scale influence with larger organizations. I actually just saw this when someone was talking about how do staff plus engineers influence larger technical changes in organizations. The same idea, like Nemawashi, you go around, you talk to people, get people on board one, like person by person. By the time you're getting into an RFC, larger group discussion, you already know what the answer is because you've already talked to everyone. And that's a tactic, which people who are, have not dealt with things at the scale may not even realize. They think, oh, I'll just fire out a group thing and we'll just chat about it in a group and everyone will get together and kumbaya and it'll work. And then they're shocked when it doesn't, because it's just because the dynamics don't work that way. So warning people about this, helping them learn how to do this effectively, again, useful, buys influence. Here on the right here, I have a link here, which because I have more tactics here. There are these things about, okay, you're dealing with very large scale cross-boundary initiatives. And usually the answer to resolving them are not always, we'll all just talk together and everything will work out because we're all in it together type thing. There's a few tactics where, yes, it would be nice if we all were all in together, but there are varying interests and you kind of have to do certain things to make sure that things work out well. The example here quickly is just the use of liaisons that are specifically selected for particular skill sets, which may not be as useful at a smaller scale, but at a large scale, they're very useful. So there's a lot of deliberate things that happen to navigate politics. I will also, just on a final point on this one, just want to say, like, at the L2 plus level, this idea of there are no politics is nonsense. You may say it for cultural purposes, but that's not actually true. It doesn't reflect reality. You always have varying interests, whether or not people, like, at least not politics in the sense that people hate you. It's more that people have differing interests and you have to navigate that. So there are different tactics for it. Okay. And let's look at L3 leaders. So a big shift here with L3 leaders is is not wasting their time, but treating them like a human. So there's two phenomena I found when I first encountered people at this L3 level. So leaders of leaders of leaders is one, they have almost no time available. Typically, this is where you start seeing executive assistants show up to help with time management, organizing meetings, et cetera, stuff like that. This is also typically a level where you start seeing, not always, right? So which could be one level beyond this, but you stop seeing sometimes they're not part of a team, which means that their role, their experience is much lonelier than you might think. So this thing of starting to feel like, hey, nobody, there's no one I can talk to. And two, I have no time. Is almost affects how all the interactions go. So because of that, I have two tactics here. This is probably where it's the hardest for me, because like this is sort of the extent of where I'm starting to have influence. But the two tactics that I tend to use are, one, getting to the point including if you're asking for something, just ask for it. Don't like beat around the bush, like get to the point. And two, respectfully saying what is needed to be said. So the phenomena of people not talking, telling you stuff, combined with the, you know, they're still human and they need someone to recognize that they're not like robotic, this kind of abstract executive person. And like leaning into that can get you influence because it's like you understand the situation they're in. Okay, so actually, I think I probably flipped my slides around. But so this one, what do L3 leaders typically do? Growing leaders of leaders, just another level up, which is even more complicated. Allocating headcount. So if you're talking about, hey, where, how do I allocate budget to different groups? You're happening at this level. You're dealing with higher level politics and escalation. So that means like company level, organization level politics escalations. You are probably establishing larger term strategies. So you're like, you're the person who creates the air sandwich. If you're not clear about how things link up, it's kind of like you and typically not a lot of time. Okay, so going to the get to the point thing. So this is like the first time I ever had an encounter with an executive level, this kind of L3 leader type person. The first advice he gave me was, yeah, Jason, you kind of need to get to the point. I don't have time. Because I was like, I'm going to tell you how I got to this conclusion. I'm working through all the steps, which is kind of typical when I'm talking to other people because I'm trying to teach people how to solve the problem. And here he's like, no, you don't need to do that, man. You just need to get to the point, and then I will ask you if I want to know how you got there. So this is essentially the idea here is that you should be using inductive logic, not deductive logic. Deductive logic is starting from the beginning and then working the steps that lead you to a conclusion. Inductive logic is starting with the conclusion and then explaining how you reach that conclusion. Okay, so if you're at an L3 leader plus, typically, you want to go with inductive logic. Just get to the point. If they want more details, they'll tell you that I want more details. So you want to be prepared with it, but sometimes they'll say, cool, I don't need to know, and then you're moving on, right? Because again, efficiency with time, et cetera. Kind of related to that, which again, I encountered maybe like recently, is you don't try to teach them how to fish. So this whole thing of, if you give someone a fish, you feed them and like once, and then if you teach them how to fish, they eat forever kind of thing. At this level, they don't fish. If they need to fish or they need fish, they delegate the fishing to other people. So don't try to teach them how to fish. They're not interested. And again, you're wasting time. Again, it's like same thing with inductive logic. You could say, hey, here's a fish. If they want to know how you got that fish or how the fish is, like how fishing works or something, they'll ask and then you can have that ready to go, but you don't start there. Okay. Does that make sense to everyone? This was kind of the most interesting thing I've learned over the years because it was weird when I first encountered it.
So Jason, just when you talk about don't teach them to fish, some of the people that I encounter at that level, I guess it depends on how you define fishing. Because some of the people that I encounter at that level maybe don't have certain subtle skills that I think that they should have at that level in terms of managing communication or being effectively empathetic in their communication to maximize the impact of their message.
Yeah, and then you should be doing this slide here. You respectfully say what needs to be said. Right. Now that from there, they may ask you to help them or they won't. But I wouldn't go to say, let me teach you how to do it until they ask for it. What I would say you do here is you say it, right? Because again, it's like if they were saying they're not that necessarily that effective at communicating, it's useful for them to hear it. And they may actually be in a situation where nobody's telling them, right? There's like a here, like they stop hearing problems due to distance, right? They're too far away from problems or filtering because people are trying to, suck up. So like they go, I don't want them to feel bad. So I'm not going to tell them because like you're in a position of power. So they filter. So you never hear anything. And then having someone who is willing to say it, but also say it respectfully, because second point here, even people with power, they want to feel safe, right? They're still humans. And also probably lonelier because they may not have a peer group that they interact with that often. So having someone who could say, oh, I can trust that this person will tell me what I need to hear and that they respect me. Like they're not trying to show that I'm bad at my job per se. They're just providing me useful feedback. That becomes very useful. You become very influential. You get invited to stuff and all this, so on and so forth. Like this phenomenon of less team peer support, people not telling them stuff, it can be very fairly isolating feeling. So being able to respectfully say what does need to be said is useful, both for useful for them, but also influence, because now you're someone who becomes trustworthy and get invited to things. But again, said before, like this may cause them to ask you to teach them something, or might not, and I would not step in unless it's being asked for. The other levels, it's like you probably follow a similar type of thing, but not as severe. I think sometimes you can kind of just like work through a problem without necessarily saying that. But this becomes there's like a cliff here as well. Okay, so summarizing tactics. The kind of general approach that I take, and this is not the only approach, but this is the one I tend to take for tactics for influence and for leaders at different levels. If you want to be influential to leaders, you need to be useful for them. And in order to be useful, you want to understand their goals and context. Once you understand their goals and context, you can do things that are helpful, that are useful for them. And that gives you influence because they trust you. There's things that you, like, it's valuable for you to be around. And therefore you can, beyond the things that you're doing that are useful, you can even ask for or influence things that are not even related to that because you have this base level of trust and value in that relationship. Okay, again, these are more guidelines than actual rules. And also I would say, which I mentioned before, every leader is, they're still human and they're unique. You will see different specific preferences, different specific strengths and backgrounds, etc. The levels kind of indicate what's typical that occurs there and what are typical concerns. So if you had to guess, if you had to take a bet, they're reasonable. But once you start to learn who a specific person is, you'll pick up more specific problems or concerns or styles. And then you want to adapt to that and adjust as needed. Okay, so I guess we can switch to questions. And I'm also curious if anyone has any other tactics that they found effective.
Thank you, Jason, for the talk. There is a question here in the chat. It says, Mihai asking if you could go over again the deductive, inductive logic piece.
Oh, okay. Okay, I have a funny little example here for deductive logic, in inductive logic. So deductive logic is, you kissed my girlfriend, you insulted my mother, you kicked my cat, therefore I hate you. So you're kind of like, here are the facts, building it up, and then you have a conclusion. Inductive logic is, I hate you. Why do I hate you? You kissed my girlfriend, you insulted my mother, you kicked my cat. Right now, with this, with a L3 leader, I would say you could just say, I hate you. And then they'll go, cool. And then they move on and you don't say anything.
Right?
Yeah. Or they might say, oh, I'd like to know how you came to that conclusion. And they say, oh, okay, cool. I got some follow-up stuff.
That one makes sense. Like, you don't want to come across as confrontational, because then, you know, that you're not setting up yourself for productive conversation after that, or constructive conversation after that. So that makes sense. Thanks for clarifying that.
Yeah. Like I've what was the last time I've done this? Again, like I go, oh, I messed that one up. The last time I saw this was, I'm going, hey, here's an overall strategy. So how should we be allocating particular capabilities, which these things are, we say, hey, they're innovation bucket, experimental bucket, productive. These are commodity stuff. And this is how we want to split them up and reallocate efforts and stuff like this. And I was like spending all this time talking through how we derived all this, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, just get to the point. right? Like, because to some extent, they even lost the point that I was trying to get across, and it was just, okay. Like, they just don't have time to work through this stuff. Versus all the L2 leaders were like, oh, cool, and they're like working the problem with you. It's just like a completely different dynamic. Okay, does that make sense?
It does. Thank you.
Yeah. So Jason, a follow-up to this question. Can I ask you, so would you use that that kind of tactic or sort of technique to communicate with anybody who is busy or no? Like, if people are on the ground, if they do the job, they do need to know the facts. And would you differentiate? Like, is it? I'm just thinking. Is it a good technique to use with inductive logic with anybody who is busy or rather not?
Sort of. There are some cases where I'm saying you really should not be proceeding if you don't know why that's there. Like, it's not safe. Because you almost have to say you need to understand the logic, like the how we got there, because you need to adapt as needed. For the L3, they don't need to do that. Someone else is adapting. They just need to know what was the point, and then they just authorize and we're moving on, right? Like, they don't need to know. If you say, hey, this person needs to know the mechanism because they may need to adjust things, yes, they need to understand how it got there. Having said that, yes, if it's like we already all sort of know the mechanism, just tell me what the conclusion is. Sure, right? If you are actually under severe time constraints, yes, you just go, we're going with this, and then we just trust that the logic was good because we're already moving. Like, I could think sometimes with a like maybe like an emergency or an incident type stuff, you would just say, okay, let's do this, and then we can just, like, later on we're saying, okay, this is like in a post-mortem, we could say, how did you get to that point? But okay. You wouldn't like say, we need to do this emergency thing and let me walk through the steps about how it came to that action. Like, it's way too slow. You just don't want to do that.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Yeah, perfect, makes sense. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions?
I have more a kind of a personal question, Jason. Why did you decide to unpick this subject?
It's just kind of a... Sorry, I was just getting echoed there.
If everybody who is not speaking, once you ask the question, if you could mute yourself, because otherwise we got the quality is not great. Thank you.
Yeah, like once, why am I interested in this subject? Mainly because I was noticing the difference. I thought it was just kind of interesting, right? There's broadly in the industry, people are talking, like, there's a general people talk, like, specifically on technology engineering side, like they'll say, like, engineering manager versus a director versus a VP, they're like different jobs. And I don't know if people, like, it's actually hard for people to realize this until they get exposed to that. People within the Agile Lean community, if you're trying to influence change, like, beyond like, hey, we have these skills, we use them, but also we want to encourage them to be used more broadly. And in order to be able to encourage people to use more broadly, you do need to understand how things change at different levels. So I just thought this was a useful skill. It's one that I kind of picked up over time, which at the beginning of this all, I wouldn't have even thought that this was a thing. So that's why I figured it was useful to share.
Thank you. Yeah, I enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
I guess, Aaron, you have your hand up?
Yeah, I have a quick question. So one of the things I've used also is what's called positional value or positional strength. So it's figuring out, you know, what that person is attempting to need for the advancement of their positional strength in the organization. So, yeah. I don't know how you would frame that in, but it's sort of a piece that I was taught sort of as part of Toyota production system planning, kind of.
Sure.
You know how to, because those hippo types have, you know, they have like their own career progression, and you're trying to help them, you're trying to add value to their progression and contribute to that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. Like, that does assume like that career progression is what that particular person is primarily interested in. And this is like the specific thing, you kind of like, what is that person like, where, what are their motivations, what their goals, and then you're trying to help them achieve that type of thing. I've heard similar things like in the sales context too. It's like when we're like assessing prospects, it's the same deal. We're trying to understand like what are they looking for, and then we can help them achieve that. So there's a lot of win-win type things here going on. I did have one thing which I was I thought it might be interesting just to put within all of the like all of the leaders. It's like L1 leader, learn how to become an L2 leader. L2 leader, learn how to become an L3 leader, or even how to interact, right? Because I do spend time talking to people at L1, like, okay, this, when you're interacting with the L2 person, this is what you should be doing. And if you're interacting with L2, you're interacting with L3 and so on and so forth, because you go, because even like that's something, or like if you want to be promoted to that, these are the sort of things that you need to start like thinking about getting better at, all that kind of stuff. Again, that it's still into the be useful for the goals and constraints that they like, the context that they have, which then requires influence, and they have different ways to talk about that. Okay, Maru,
you wanted to add something to this one slide. One thing I've experienced being useful for over 15 years working with execs leadership is the use of visualizations. So on top of using the right level of abstraction or giving them the starting with the end, because you don't know what kind of reasoning they find themselves in, you don't know what they need that stuff to be used for. You said on one of your slides, it could get lonely there. It is very lonely. And they have their own agenda, and they cannot, unless they have a set of trusted people in your team or other teams, they sometimes are even isolated. So having good visuals, if you give them that, you can start building credibility and trust, because they can take these as an anchor, because they're tracking dozens of topics, not just the one thing you're working on, or maybe 100. Yeah, go ahead, Jason.
So what I would add to that is, because there's stuff of, I was talking about visualization to highlight a particular problem they didn't know about, but I do agree with you of helping, because there's some aspect of not just visualizing what you think that they should be aware of, but helping them visualize what they're thinking about is important. This is like a different type of usefulness now. And
different types. So what I mean by that is the art of modeling. So
you for sure.
At a certain point, you talked about a system. And when you give them that, you encompass a lot of insights and information that it can use when they offload their working memory from the next problem and go back to the issue that you have them with.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's two things, or a few things. Like one, that you help them think through stuff, right? So it's a technique to help them think. So they go, wow, this is crazy mess. I'm on my own. Like, how do I deal with this? Helps them with that. There is also the, now I can get other people involved because now they can express it. It's outside their head. There's a thing, there's a boundary object. There's something that other people can engage in. Other people are engaging to help deal partially with the loneliness aspect. Now, I'm a part of a team again, kind of thing. There's different, the visualization thing beyond working through things, the ability for visualizations to bring people together on a shared problem also address the isolation aspect of it for sure. Brett?
You talked about, working with L3 leaders to help them become L2 leaders, L2 to become L1.
Other way around.
Other way around, yes. Sorry. Other way around. Yeah.
Remember, the infinite number. The L's can go on forever.
There's strong research to indicate that the best way to become promoted is to act in the way that your manager acts, right? Because they identify with that. If you act, even if it's not necessarily the best management approach, if you act in the same way as your manager acts, you're more likely to get promoted. Sure. So if your manager is a command and controller, if you act in a command and control manner, you're more likely to get promoted.
Yep.
So in that situation, I'm not sure that, I'm trying to grow nurturing L1 and L2 leaders in an environment where some of the L2 and a lot of the L3 leaders are very command and control.
Sure.
And so essentially, that could be putting them in a position where they're not optimizing their activities around their ability to be promoted.
Sure. Okay. So two things I typically talk about people. Like one, there's some aspect of this is messy now. It's messy now. And to help people deal with that, right? So this is why I'm saying, like, you're dealing with politics now, right? So what you think should happen and sort of the reality of the situation, how you navigate that to still, like I never advocate for people to say, just eat it, right? Life sucks, deal with it. I go, no, we're intelligent, crafty, sneaky. So we're going to say, we're going to try to drive things in the direction where we think it goes, but you also can't ignore that you're dealing with these politics. Like, so how do you process that? How do you deal with it? Models, et cetera. So one thing is like you go, there's a few things. One, I usually go, okay, let's go above that. Like, I don't care how the style of this person is, what is a larger objective of the organization and how effective are we at accomplishing that? If we can show that we are effective at contributing to this larger thing, our style can acquire influence, right? There's the reporting line, but influence networks are not just reporting line, right? You can play it by jumping a little, like, hey, if I make you look good because I can deliver a particular outcome, even though I have a different style, you're still protect me because you're protecting yourself type stuff. Or I have peers who are kind of this, like, whatever. The other one was sometimes I also say is you go, I'm trying to help you become effective within this industry, not this company, right? You, especially in technology, people only stick around for a few years. I'm going, you're not going to be here for like decades, right? And I would say that style, you're not going to go to any place that's any good. But this style is the one where you are like being more effective as a leader, that you are focused on broader stuff, that you're not this kind of old school Theory X type thing. Like, if you eventually want to work at a obsolete bank, maybe, sure. But not like at a good place. So that's one that you help. So I kind of different ways of framing, I guess. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, it's helpful. I mean, I also want to ultimately influence the L3s, which is the more challenging part because they're less introspective. I find them a lot less introspective than the L2s in particular.
Okay, so if you're like, so this is not growing an L2 and L3 type things. If I'm saying targeting an L3 and they're not on board, this is where they still have problems. They still have the thing of, am I effective? I'm on my own kind of type things, even for the people who are kind of like, if sometimes when you say, hey, why is someone so command control and telling them what to do? Some of that is due to lack of safety, right? They're alone. They don't know what to do. They got positional power, but they're not effective. What do? The only thing they know how to do, which doesn't work. So that's kind of an angle. This is not always the case. Sometimes you go, oh, okay, I'm dealing with a sociopath. Okay, different. But presuming that is not actually that common. So presuming that's the case, then it's just helping people learn how to be more effective. And it doesn't necessarily match up what they're currently doing. Mihai?
Thanks. I'm cognizant of time. Jason, I'm not sure if we're running over. So are you okay to stay a couple more minutes?
We can do a couple.
Okay, thanks for that. And thanks for the presentation as well. I thought that was really insightful. I wanted to ask, one thing that I picked up on was the vacuum, the feedback vacuum. And there's a concept that I've come across in a book called, I think it's Primal Leadership, called the CEO disease, which is along the same lines. You know, the higher you go up the ladder, the people are more inclined to suck up to you and you lack context, you know. So what, I'd be curious to know your thoughts on why does that happen? And if you've tried any techniques to try and influence that, to kind of maybe help L2 leaders to build that self-awareness and influence them to be more reflective as Brett mentioned.
Yeah, there's a thing so let's set aside the suck up thing. So I'll put that as a separate problem. There's one problem that has nothing to do with sucking up. It is just pure distance, right? The further up you go, like the further distance, you just don't. There's no exposure, limited exposure. You're not aware of stuff. So you get this information gap thing. And it's not just L3. Like you keep going. You just see this replicated across. Now, one thing I weighed to think about it, I go, you can still at least deal with the gap that you have. So you could say, hey, at least a certain distance I can deal with. And you can make sure that at least within a certain range, you can extend it. And you can even say incrementally, I just keep extending the stage. One of the issues is you actually physically run out of time. you can't know everything. It's not possible because there's not enough hours in the day. So you have to accept there's an exposure gap up there that you have to deal with. So this is where you get into, what do I need to be aware of? What do I need to get connected with? What has to be delegated? What has to be kind of distributed, and what should not be? I've seen people do things like skip levels. So they do regular interaction with one additional level. This is just to extend the awareness. Like, one, it extends your awareness, but also establishes a particular pattern. So even though you yourself, you don't know everything, but you're establishing a pattern that allows the linkages to be more effective. Across organization, there's that. There is also remote people, like people with like all remote companies will just talk about, like, you start just being crazy transparent about everything. Like, everything just gets published and it's broadcast. You run into different issues of curation and all this kind of stuff, but things like that. And that can help. In terms of, now if we get to the suck up problem, there's a little bit of, there's some, like, I almost want to say systemically reward people coming, like, raising problems. Like, it has to be rewarded for people who say something's going wrong. Like, everyone has to feel like, okay, that's how it's done. If you're not doing that, like, people look at you funny kind of thing. That can try to help with the suck up problem. I'd have to think, but I don't think there's any other way to stop it.
Okay. Thanks for the questions, Jason. I'm conscious of your time. So it's been great talk. I think it was a great conversation with all the questions from the audience. Just before we close, like, where can people find your work, and where would you prefer them to contact you?
Probably the best spots, I had it in the cover there, the best place is probably on Twitter, at JCHYip, or just search for me on LinkedIn. I also have a blog on Medium, which I update every so often. That's probably it.
So I hope everyone enjoyed as much as we have enjoyed the talk. And hopefully we see all of you back in our next meetups. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you very much. That was very informative. You can see on the chats, you probably didn't have time to go through the chat yet, but there is lots of complimentary messages there. So thank you very much for sharing your knowledge with us.
Thank you.